Our next case this morning is number 013909, Hardiman against the United States. Mr. Zolak.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Zolak, and I represent the petitioner appellant in this cause, Carlitos Hardiman. Mr. Hardiman was convicted after a jury trial of conspiring to distribute and to possess with intent to distribute cocaine base. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. There has already been a direct appeal. The direct appeal examined the issue, certain sentencing issues dealing with relevant conduct, and his conviction and sentence were affirmed on direct appeal. In the direct appeal, there was an issue relating to ineffective assistance of counsel, but at the point of time of the oral argument, that issue was withdrawn, and it was thought to be more appropriate to put it in a 2255 petition, where it is now before your honors. Originally, this habeas corpus petition also had an issue relating to Apprendi, The appellant was given leave to brief that after being denied a certificate of appealability before the district court. This court granted us leave to appeal that. But in light of this court's ruling in Curtis, we don't seek to argue that because I think this court has made it clear that this court believes that Apprendi is not an appropriate issue for a case on collateral review. So that leaves us with the issue of ineffective assistance of counsel. Basically what we maintain here is that looking at the entire proceedings from the way objections were not made, from the way witnesses were cross-examined, from the way evidence was put on in the defendant's case in chief, from the way the case was not investigated, and from the way the sentencing proceeding was conducted, that there was no meaningful adversarial testing here. And as such, we believe that we have met standard outlined by both Strickland and other cases that Mr. Hardiman received ineffective assistance of counsel in this case. I would like to point out that, as far as I can determine from reading lots of ineffective assistance of counsel cases, I understand it's a very difficult burden for an appellant to overcome, but I would emphasize that under Lockhart talks about that this test is not outcome determinative. And Lockhart says an analysis focusing solely on mere outcome determination without attention to whether the result of the proceeding was fundamentally unfair or unreliable is detective. It is our contention that this proceeding was fundamentally unfair. If your honors look at the examples that we bring out from the record and look at the affidavits that we attach to the petition for writ of habeas corpus, it is clear that at trial, the defendant, now the petitioner appellant, received more protection from the assistant United States attorney than he did from his own counsel. And when you have a situation like that, I submit that meaningful adversarial testing has been abandoned. Repeatedly, during the trial of this case and contained in this record, are instances where the assistant United States attorney is putting on witnesses who are replying with objectionable responses, and it is the assistant United States attorney who interrupts his own witness in order to tell that witness that is not a proper way of answering. For instance, it's in the brief.
That eliminates the necessity, however, of the defense attorney calling the court's attention to precisely the same thing.
But
you're arguing against the fairness of the prosecutor as opposed to the inadequacies of the defense. It's perfectly appropriate for the prosecutor to be reining in his witnesses, isn't it?
But there was other.
We'll stick with what we're talking about now. That's perfectly appropriate, isn't it?
Yes, it's appropriate for the prosecutor to do that.
And it would not be occasion for a defendant to say anything if it's being taken care of.
Well, the defendant should have said it first, so that it would be obvious to the jury.
You were talking about speed. It doesn't make any difference. What we're talking about is, does the information, the matter, get corrected by somebody in the courtroom of state? And one of the people in the courtroom that's supposed to do that is the prosecutor. Of course, if the prosecutor let it go, you're asking for the prosecutor to look like the dummy instead of the defense lawyer.
Well, I'm not asking for the prosecutor to look like the dummy.
Well, if he fails to straighten him out and he gets brought to a task for that purpose or for that.
But I'm talking about the whole, the entire proceeding.
But I'm talking about that one issue.
Yeah, I agree in that it's appropriate for a prosecutor to correct a witness when the witness comes out with objectionable.
His own witness should be correct. That's what I agree with you.
But there were other examples which are listed in the brief in which the prosecutor didn't bother doing that, and the defense attorney didn't do it, and objectionable material came in. And although it was appropriate for the prosecutor to correct their own witness, I'm giving these examples as the overall context in which this trial took place.
I know why you're doing it.
Okay. For instance, Overton, who was one of the co-defendants who cooperated with the government, at one point in the record asked if, after she testifies that Hardiman was one of the main suppliers, she then is allowed to get in a prior consistent statement where she said the same thing to a police officer. There's no objection by the defense lawyer, and the prosecutor doesn't bother correcting that. That's the problem when we rely upon the prosecutor to correct objectionable evidence. The prosecutor is an officer of the court and should be doing that, but the prosecutor is also an advocate. And there are times when the prosecutor, as a natural advocate in a trial situation, will be trying to do whatever the prosecutor can get away with. And that's the difficulty here.
In some cases, he did effectively impeach the government's witnesses.
Well, that's a very interesting point. Yes, in the government's brief, they bring out instances where there was some effective impeachment. However, I went through that very carefully, and I would just point out the following. Number one, most of that information had already been brought up and fronted on direct examination. And number two, I'm not saying that he didn't do anything correctly. Again, I'm talking about the overall context here. So besides the fact that he's failing to object, and I mean serious things are getting in, other misconduct, and granted, there was legitimate 404B evidence that got in here, but at one point, one of his co-conspirators says, oh, he's been dealing dope for 9 or 10 years. I mean, at a certain point, it becomes overkill, and at a certain point, he's just not getting effective representation. Besides...
You're popping into your rebuttal, old friend.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I would... I know you've read the briefs. I would just say, point out... that the affidavit indicates that at the time of sentencing, he totally abrogated his responsibility, and the sentencing, his preparation for sentencing was farmed out to some subcontractor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Solak. We'll hear now from Mr. Clark.
Good morning, Your Honors. Essentially, what we have here is a case that needs to be analyzed under the Strickland standard, and that would include the two-prong test, that the errors must be so serious that counsel was not effectively acting as an advocate for his client. But more importantly here, the deficient performance must have prejudiced the defendant. And I believe that through a thorough examination of the record, one can conclude quite easily that that counsel did offer this defendant effective representation. He cross-examined each and every witness here. He hammered each and every witness that he could on the criminal history when it was appropriate to do so. He also used cross-examination of some witnesses to attack the credibility of other government witnesses. He filed a couple of pretrial motions before trial. All in all, when you examine the record, it's simply a matter of providing effective assistance of counsel to the defendant, and the errors that the appellant counsel raises are in light of the whole record, the errors that he raises are simply not that prejudicial to the defendant when you consider the whole record. And consequently, Your Honors, I believe that the decision of the district court should be affirmed. One last point with regard to the sentencing matter, I would note that the defense counsel, or rather appellate counsel here, has not really pointed to anything in particular that would that should disturb the findings made by the district court judge. And therefore, again, any errors that he has raised simply do not did not prejudice the defendant at the district court level. Consequently, I would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. We have 2 minutes, Mr. Sollock.
Very briefly, Your Honors, I would point out that it is difficult to we're in the sentencing procedure, and it's in the record. The district court judge basically says it, where counsel totally abrogated his role. It becomes difficult to everything becomes objectionable at that point, where he basically did nothing. As I pointed out, Overton testified to this 20 ounces, and nothing at all was done about that, even by way of argument. Your Honors, I would point out that in the government's brief, they say the following at page 21 of their brief, that most of these witnesses, they're talking about now the cross-examination of the government witnesses, emerged from cross-examination looking like dope dealers, dope users, perverts, wholly owned creatures of the government, fools, or some combination thereof. I respectively submit that they didn't emerge from cross-examination looking like that. They emerged from direct examination looking like that. And what defense counsel did was add to that and corroborate that and act as a second prosecutor. Thank you very much.
Well, it's about best you can do is work with what you've got to work with. I mean,
if you're working.
The prosecutor didn't make them angelic in the beginning because they weren't angelic, so there you go. But jury spoke.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken up.